This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Congressman Ro Khanna is on the line with us. He represents the 17th District of California. He's the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A .house.gov is his website. And you can tweet him at Rep, as in Representative, Ro, R-O, Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A. Congressman, welcome back.
Great to be back on, Tom.
Great to have you with us. It's daylight savings time. I'd like to know when we're going to do away with this insanity and just go to standard time forever. And B,
you know what the funny thing is? Kansas Chu, who's an assembly member in my district, has proposed this for every year, and I'm on the federal bill actually to do away with it. And as is Marco Rubio out of all folks, and right. I always give him a hard time. Saying, this is your priority, but now I'm going to tell them Tom Hartman shares your view, and maybe this is more of a priority than we all realize.
Well, you know, it's actually killing people. There are several hundred accidents every year that probably wouldn't, science says wouldn't have happened if people weren't feeling jet lagged. I mean, car accidents, people die. And, yep. So it has a measurable negative outcome. And now that we learn that the guy who originally proposed it back during World War I, he was a businessman. He actually wanted it because he wanted to be able to play golf after work because it extends evening hours.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I always thought it was something to do with farmers and others.
The farmers were offended by it because they work based on the sun. They don't care what time the clock says. When the sun comes up, the cows need to be milked.
Right? Yeah.
the theory was that the way that this guy sold this was that the factories will not have to pay so much for electric lighting during World War I, during this time of crisis, as we were making war material, because, you know, people can work later into the evening and the light will still be out. Well, you know, that logic holds if your factory's only running at night, but they were also running in the morning, and you don't actually get more daylight. But it turns out that the guy who was pushing it because he wanted to be able to play golf when he got home from work.
So, wow. Well, that puts it in a whole new perspective. Well, this gives me more urgency. I'm going to talk to my team about the bill and where we are on it.
But I'm guessing that is not at the top of your mind on most days. And by the way, for people who don't know, Congressman Khanna is with us for the whole hour taking your calls. We can go right to the calls unless there's something you want to share with us about what's going on in Congress or what you're up to these days.
Well, just the big week this week, the president's budget comes out, and here's the irony about the president's budget. Even the Republicans are opposed to half of it. I mean, every year the president cuts NIH funding, and most appallingly, he cuts the one program in the federal government dealing with manufacturing, the Manufacturing Extensionship Partnership, and it's one of the most outrageous budget documents, but people should read it just to get a sense of how... Right-wing the president is, and we're going to be debating that this week in Congress.
Right, and just to summarize it very, very quickly, Trump is proposing to increase military spending substantially, about $34 billion more than the military has asked for, and he wants to cut $1.1 trillion from Medicaid and health programs. He wants to cut $327 billion from anti-poverty programs, $207 billion from student loan programs, and he wants to cut $200 billion from the Federal and Postal Retirement Service, which is all just nuts. And he wants to lock in $1 trillion a year budget deficits so that they can scream even louder on the old Jude Winiski two Santa Claus theory from 1976. Scream even louder when a Democrat gets into the White House, which in all probability is going to happen in a year and a half. So,
the one thing, Tom, I do think is important, some of us, Bernie Sanders, myself, and a few others, have opposed this president's defense increase. But a lot of Democrats have actually... They oppose the other parts of the budget, but they vote for the defense increase. And, it's so outrageous. I mean, I thought the defense budgets were high to begin with, but to be voting for this president's defense budgets, I think, is just unacceptable.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much, the defense industry just pours money on Washington, D.C., and I'm wondering how much of that is starting to go into the Trump administration. Anyhow, let's pick up some phone calls here. Joe in Cupertino, California, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna. Who I think is your congressman.
Good morning, congressman.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tom. And congratulations on your vice chairmanship with the Bernie Sanders campaign. I appreciate that very much. I wanted to ask you about your opinion on Trump and Korea. I'm really concerned, as I'm sure you are as well, with the Mueller report coming out that something might happen on the peninsula that might cause us to change what appeared to be a really close ability to maybe sign a peace agreement, but I guess that's out the window. But he's pretty radical, so I wondered if you could just give me your opinion there. And again, congratulations, and we're going to get this done.
And Congressman, didn't you go down and talk with Jimmy Carter? In fact, you used to work at the Carter Center?
I had interned at the Carter Center. I had a great honor last week of going down and seeing President Carter. We had a half-hour meeting. He's still brilliant, and he talked about how he and Kim Jong-un's grandfather actually had come to an agreement, a 12-part framework, which he then gave to Bill Clinton, but for whatever reason, it never was fully implemented, and then John Bolton came in and killed the framework. So I said to President Carter, who at the Carter Center can I work with to reintroduce this framework? And he started laughing, and he said, well, me, because no one else understands it. And so we're now working with his close aide to try to reorient the framework. You know, I'd gone down because I had offered a resolution on finally ending the armistice between North Korea and the United States. I mean, we're still technically at war and having right. a peace resolution. And President Carter had supported that. But he said, well, you can't just put out this peace resolution. It's sort of like putting out an answer to a math problem without showing your steps. You've got to show how are we going to get to this point. And so we're now working on a concrete framework of what the United States can do, what North Korea can do that can get us to the resolution. I believe, and I don't want to put words in the president's mouth, so let me just say I believe that John Bolton has been the most responsible for the scuttling of this agreement, and he's never wanted us to have an agreement with North Korea.
Yeah, John Bolton never saw a war he didn't want. Buddy in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Congressman. It's an honor and a pleasure to talk to both of you. I want to define democratic socialism in three words. We the people. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, okay, good. It's not we the 1% or we the white people. It's we the people, everybody in. And I have a quick question, if I may. And I'm sure the congressman is aware of this, but Tom, periodically you read off a list of things that the majority of Americans want, like background checks, maternity leave, stuff like that. And I'm really tired of them defining those positions as far left. And I'm wondering, where can I find that list?
The list that I typically read from is from a survey that was done a couple of years ago by the conservative or by the Progressive Change Committee. Hang on just a second. I'll give you the. It's the Progressive Change Institute. Excuse me. And if you Google a poll of likely 2016 voters, it'll pop up. So
excellent. Thank
buddy,
you.
Buddy, thanks for the call. Congressman, did you want to comment on any of that?
Sure. Well, look, I think our platform, the Democratic Party platform, is We the People, where we're talking about $15 minimum wage, increasing wages for the middle class, providing health care, Medicare for all, providing expanding Social Security. I was on MSNBC last night, and the Trump's communications director starts saying how their whole campaign is going to be against socialism. And I pointed out to him that, you know, they called Barack Obama a socialist twice. They called Hillary Clinton a socialist. They called Truman a socialist. They've called FDR a socialist. So I just think these attacks are ridiculous and aren't going to fly, given that most programs that the Democratic Party is talking about, that Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren are talking about, are programs that are going to help the middle class earn what they deserve and have economic security.
Amen. Robert in Anaheim, California, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna. Robert, let's stand Sirius XM. Apparently, Robert isn't there, so I'm going to put him back on hold. Robert's on line three, Shira. He's probably listening to his radio instead of his phone. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Congressman Ro Khanna is with us, taking your calls for the hour. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents the 17th District of California. And in the U.S. House of Representatives, his website, Khanna, khanna.house.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Congressman Ro Khanna. And welcome back, Al in Wills Point, Texas. Hey, Al, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Well, what I wanted to do was just point out something. They're calling us socialist, which I would really rather be called a democratic socialist, because that's truer to the definition of what we are. But why don't we call them what they are? Fascist. And that's really all I had to say.
Is it time to use the F word and or simply start demonizing the worst aspects of capitalism, Congressman?
Well, look, I'm not for resorting to their tactics. First of all, their charge on the merits is absurd. I mean, no one, socialism by definition is talking about the use of the public takeover of the means of production, and no one in the Democratic Party believes that government needs to take over small businesses and businesses in this country. So I don't think we should use rhetoric that is not precise just because they do. But I think we can talk about the systematic corruption in their administration, the fact that they basically have people there who are for private gain compromising national security and undermining democracy, the systematic abuse of power and overreach, and their disenfranchisement of millions of Americans. And to me, those all have huge factual basis and are turning off a large number of people, even people who voted for the president last time.
Laura, in Hazel Park, Michigan, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, good afternoon, Congressman. Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk about Trump's slush fund. He passes an emergency that we know is not an emergency. And where does he go to get the money? From the defense budget. So now he's figured out, can't get Congress to move, so we'll just put all this money into the budget. And then I can just dip into it whenever I feel like it.
So you're suggesting that his increasing the defense budget beyond what the DOD wants is creating a slush fund for himself.
Exactly.
Okay, Congressman?
And that's what I truly think it is.
Yeah, Congressman, your thoughts?
You know, I think there's a lot to what the caller has to say in terms of his trying to increase defense and then use it for whatever purpose. I will point out that I think our generals have engaged in almost passive resistance of this president, because the president has asked for a list of projects under the national emergency from the generals, from the Pentagon, saying what money can I redirect from military construction towards building this wall. And everyone knows that's illegal. You cannot redirect money from military construction to domestic projects. It's against the law. And so you have the irony in this country of the Pentagon basically standing up for our Constitution against a civilian elected president.
Yeah, It's a remarkable one. We just have 30 seconds until the break here, Congressman. Do you think that the military is actively pushing back, or is this all kind of in the background and they're trying not to irritate Trump?
On the border wall and the funding, I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're concerned. I mean, I think the case law is so clear, and these are conservative justices as well, that the military cannot enforce domestic law and that they cannot redirect funding for domestic law. What the president is really asking them to do is violate their oath of office and break their constitutional obligations. And so if I were a general or if I were running the Pentagon, I think I'd be concerned about my own reputation, and they're trying to do as much as they can. Look, now that Mattis is no longer there, I'll tell you, when he used to come and talk to Congress, he used to complain, especially when we were behind closed doors, about the president. So I think these folks are in a very difficult situation.
Yep. Congressman Ro Khanna with us for the hour, taking your calls. He's the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Brad in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Congressman, thank you for taking my call. And I'd like your comment off air on this. I believe I can prove Trump as a racist by this. Remember that Coast Guard lieutenant, white supremacist, domestic terrorist of a couple of weeks ago? That story just dropped like a rock and it disappeared. Trump has said nothing, and nothing even mildly condemnatory about this guy. Let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say it were a Black Lives Matter or an Antifa supporter who did the same thing.
Or a Muslim.
Trump would be all over it. Trump would be all over it. And I'll take your comment off air.
Well, I agree with you about the president's hypocrisy, and I was also listening to Michael Cohen's testimony as he recounted detail after detail about the president making racist remarks or using race as a wedge issue. I think of that at this point, it's pretty clear to the entire country about how the president has used race to divide the nation. What is concerning to me is how much support the president retains despite using these strategies. And one would have thought that a lot more people would have spoken out against him, but unfortunately that hasn't been the case.
I suspect he's retaining support because of those strategies, but, you know, I pray that I'm wrong. Jill, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Well, hello, gentlemen. I wanted to bring up with the military budget that Trump is proposing, a great way to counter that might be the audit that was done, and I think it was done on the Pentagon, that showed tremendous amount of money just vanished. And we need more audits like that, and I'd like to hear what you have to say offline. Thank you.
Thank you, man. We need audits, and there's been financial mismanagement, but there has also been a concentration of the defense industry that has jacked up prices on almost every part that is supplied to the military. Elizabeth Warren and I and Tim Ryan did a letter pointing out TransDigm and how calling for an investigation on how they were increasing prices for many of the parts. And there was a report that was just released showing that for almost 95% or more of their parts, they were overcharging systematically. This is a huge issue in the military. Harry Truman basically became president with the Truman Commission when he exposed defense contractors for ripping off the American people at the time during World War II. And I think it's time for something analogous to that Truman Commission, where we can look at how defense contractors are profiting at the expense of the American public and ripping off the taxpayer and the military, leading to these bloated budgets.
Tarek in Griffin, Georgia, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hey, Rokana, it's really an honor to be speaking with you. First, I want to thank you for, you know, giving a light boatman's speech for Bernie Sanders in one of his rallies. You were like the AOC. A lot of people don't know, but you were like the AOC before AOC was AOC. But my question is, what can we expect to see forth in the Green New Deal? Because, you know, with my job, I'm in the trucking industry, and, you know, autonomous trucks are already, you know, hitting the road on I-10, so. And I don't see too many. I see some politicians, you know, you guys like you and AOC and Andrew Yang. But is there going to be anything to, you know, help out our industry along with other industries that might be dying away due to this technology? Because when manufacturing left Detroit, you know, we know what happened there.
Well, sir, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you raising this issue. We need to have first thoughtful regulation and safety regulation. In my view, as we move towards autonomous vehicles, that doesn't mean we won't still need someone in a truck, particularly to manage the loading and offloading, even if it's being done by a robot, and to make sure that the truck is not malfunctioning. For example, we're on an airplane. When you fly, a lot of the landing and takeoff is automatic. I still am very grateful that we have a pilot there. So I think having safety regulation is important. Second, I think we have to really think about, well, what type of jobs are still going to be available in trucking? And we'll see that some of the long-haul trucking may be most automated, but they're not going to be able to automate we're a long, long way off from them being able to automate delivery into neighborhoods and the last few miles of trucking. And so I think we have to be preparing people also for the positions that are going to be most needed. But unfortunately, Congress hasn't been really thinking long-term about the regulations and the strategy that's going to be needed.
Congressman Rokanas is with us for the hour, taking your calls. He represents the 17th District of California in the U.S. House of Representatives. He's the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And you can tweet him at RepRokanna, his website, Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A.house.gov. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna and Congressman
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And Congressman, hang on the line. I wanted to speak to you real briefly. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna. And welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Online with us for the hour, Congressman Ro Khanna of California, Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, taking your calls. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida, listening on Sirius XM. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, good afternoon, Congressman Khanna.
Good afternoon, Charles.
Okay, yeah. I love your show, Tom. I'm just calling because I was very alarmed over the weekend. I mean, I just got this shiver up my spine. I've been paying attention to what's been going on in India and Pakistan with the downed Air Force pilot and him being returned back to India safely. And, you know, this is, I mean, what I realized and I didn't understand was, is there some type of campaign going on for Modi to be reelected? Was this something that,
yes,
that they staged, that Donald Trump can also stage with Panama? Because, I mean, you know, if his numbers are tanking, is this something that he would do as far as, you know, trying to start something with Panama to bring up his numbers and make him seem like a wartime general?
You know? You mean Venezuela, Charles?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Venezuela, yes,
yeah.
Yes, please.
Yep.
I mean, Charles, I'm very nervous about this. I have people that's in the military, and even if those guys aren't related to me, you know, I still feel for them as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Charles.
Well, Charles, I appreciate the question. Let me address both. It's something I obviously know quite a lot about and care about. My grandfather spent time in Gandhi's independence movement and was part of pre-partition India and Pakistan. He was born in Lahore and then went to India. And he grew up in a tradition in the subcontinent of pluralism. And when Nehru was the first prime minister, of really understanding and respecting different minority perspectives. I think, unfortunately, India has moved into a direction currently of sectarianism and nationalism in its politics, fueled in some parts by Modi. And while the politics of the area are very complicated and the conflict with Pakistan, I don't think Modi is helping the situation. And it very well may be that he's appealing to nationalism prior to the election. The same thing, I think, the analogy is very appropriate with Venezuela, where Trump has basically outsourced policy to Rubio in Florida because of the Venezuelan-American population and his hopes for the 2020 election. And here you have a situation where our intervention is only going to make things worse. I mean, put aside one's views on Maduro, and I think Maduro has been guilty of a lot of failed policies and has violated human rights. But when the United States goes and tries to intervene and appoint the Speaker of the House or declare that the Speaker of the House, Guaido, is the new president, that only inflames the Maduro base and allows Maduro to go to people and be even stronger. And so both the Trump policy is counterproductive, and it's being driven by domestic politics.
David, in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Am I saying that right, David?
Yes.
You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Congressman Khanna. Thank you for serving in Congress.
Thank you.
Your explanation a couple weeks ago about the Microsoft trust busting 20 years ago has motivated my call today. I think you're one of the smartest people in Congress. FDR said when he passed Social Security that it was an aggressive tax on labor, but he did it for political reasons. Today, you know, if you count FICA, Medicare, and state and workman's comp and all that, labor is taxed at 10%, while a machine you don't even have to pay for with depreciation rules for a year and a half. It just doesn't seem to me that with mechanization, AI, and automation coming online, that workers should be more expensive than machines.
Well, I appreciate it. I didn't catch your name, sir, but I appreciate your point very, very much, because you're absolutely right. Our tax code right now is favoring capital expenditure over human expenditure. And at a time when we should be doing exactly the opposite, where you have automation and the returns of capital are higher than ever. Why is it that, as you point out, we have tax breaks for depreciation, but we don't have tax incentives for corporations to invest in the education or workforce development or childcare of their employees? It's a total misalignment of incentives favoring capital over labor. And your point on the Microsoft case, I mean, that's a case where I tell people if you wouldn't have had Google if you didn't have the Microsoft antitrust case. Microsoft, very simply put, basically wanted everyone in this country to use Internet Explorer as a web browser. And if they had done that, and if you didn't have Netscape and other competing web browsers, the next step would have been that every web browser would have had Bing search in it. And all of us would have been using a computer that had Windows, Internet Explorer as our browser, and Bing search. And you would never have had Google. But Joe Klein and the antitrust division said, you can't do that, Microsoft. You can't force people to buy a particular browser just because they're buying your Windows. And we need now to make sure that for the new startups that you don't have companies being able to privilege their own platforms, and that requires strong antitrust enforcement.
I think it was David stimulated a thought in my mind. If you've got a factory with 100 employees and you bring in a robot to do the work of 10 of them,
right?
You now have 10 fewer people paying into Medicare and Social Security. Why not have the robot pay 10 times every year what those people would have paid into Medicare and Social Security?
Well, it's not just you, Tom, or David who has that idea. Bill Gates has said that we ought to be taxing robots at some level, which makes up for that kind of expense. I don't know what the appropriate level is, but one can make an argument, and certainly one should make an argument that you shouldn't get a depreciation for the robot. I mean, the irony right now is if you bring in a robot to replace people, you could probably write that off as a sort of a capital expenditure where you don't get that incentive for any investment in workers.
Right. Amen. George in Alsip, Illinois. George, you're on the air with Congressman Ro Khanna.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you, Congressman, for taking my call. Before I get to my point, one of the ironies of listening to radio in Chicago is that we can hear the brilliant Congressman Ro Khanna with Tom, but we also have a longtime conservative broadcaster on the radio here named Ro Khan.
That's weird.
A points apart point of view. Anyway, what I wanted to ask is this. Tom has done a great service to his longtime listenership by regularly educating us on the invidious 2006 Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act and the fact that the post office for 10 years or more would have been in the black without this legislation. What I'd like to know is that act still in effect? And if it is, what are the Democrats going to do about repealing it? And if it isn't, what are they going to do about moving all the money that was sequestered into long-term postal retirement and repurposing it for the post office to use for other purposes?
Tom, do you want to take this? Because I got to be honest, I don't know the details of that act.
Sure.
And I'm happy to
just a real quick recap. Back in 2006, the post office was making a profit, and they came out with a proposal they had the largest fleet of cars, gasoline vehicles, in the United States. And they came out with a proposal to make them electric. And the Republicans freaked out and passed this law that says that the post office has to set aside $5 billion a year, every year for the next decade. I think it was passed through budget reconciliation. $5 billion a year, every year for the next 10 years, for the retirement benefits of postal workers who will retire 75 years from now. So literally it was for people who had not yet even been born. And the whole reason was to starve the post office so they couldn't do this electric vehicle fleet, in my opinion. And that, I thought, ended in 2017. But I understand that it got revived, and I'm not sure how or why. So I don't know the answer to the second half of the question myself. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to have our staff look into it because that is ridiculous if they were going to disincentivize the post office from investing in electric vehicles. I mean, if anything, we need to do more of that, and we only have 1% of our fleet as electric vehicles. With the cost of lithium-ion battery going down, we should be investing far more. It shouldn't be that the largest electric vehicle manufacturers are all in China, which is currently the case. I mean, we're in a green energy race competitively as other people figure out that the economics mean that you're going to have alternatives to coal and oil, and America should be winning that. It makes perfect sense that we would want our post office or military to be leading in investments in that. So I will have my staff look into that and see if any repeal is needed.
Thank you, Congressman. We have, by the way, in this hour at this time, there's a hard break at 44:55, which is 30 seconds from now. What do you think about incentives in general? How do we electrify our transportation system in 30 seconds or less?
One bill I'm working on with Ed Markey says if you're going to have a tax refund for an electric vehicle, make it at the point of purchase, so it's not just for tax credits, and make it linked to domestic manufacturing. So you could put people at GM back to work to make electric SUVs if it's at the point of purchase and it is linked to domestic manufacturing. That's just one example, but I think there are a whole host of other similar policies we could have.
Yeah, amen. It's crazy that we're subsidizing the fossil fuel industry to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars a year, including as part of our military budget, and we're not subsidizing the things that will save us, literally. Congressman Ro Khanna is with us taking your calls for the hour. His website is Khanna, khanna.house.gov. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Ro is R-O. That's R-O-K-H-A-N-N-A. Rep. Ro Khanna is the Twitter handle. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. You are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Congressman, you are a very bright man. You sound like one of them guys when you were in school. You probably got straight A's, no doubt. Listen. Are you familiar with the term al-Nakba?
Morris, I'm not. I appreciate the compliment, but let me tell you, the only difference between people who do well and not usually is supportive family and parents and others. I certainly got bad marks and others too, but I had a very supportive family around me.
Well, you could have fooled me. Well, Congressman, when you get a chance, there's a man by the name of Max Blumenthal. He wrote a book called Goliath. Please, sir, take a look at it, particularly look up the term al-Nakba. It's very important in terms of what's going on in the Middle East. Could you do that for me, sir?
I'm happy to read it and take a look at it. If you want, if you can send me any article or link to my office, just send us an email through our website, and if not, I'll look it up.
I love you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Morris. Kevin in Hempstead, New York. Kevin, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
How you doing? Thank you, Congressman. Thanks for speaking with me. Congressman, I'd like to ask you a question. What do you think about ADLS? And let me go on before you answer that question. You have a group of people in the United States. They're African American descendants of slaves. They've had the biggest Holocaust in UN world history, actually, and it's still going on today. You got most of the people on the slammer are black people. And then you have Bernie Sanders saying, oh, well, we think it's too divisive and blah, blah, blah. At what point do these people actually get their reparations? And if they don't get their reparations, what's to stop them from doing an ISIS situation here where they just say, hell of it, my country doesn't give a damn about me after we fought in all of these wars.
Kevin, your phone is breaking up really badly, and I can only hear about every other word. Did you catch that, Congressman?
Kevin, I got the gist of your question. First, let me say I support reparations. I'm on the Conyers bill to study the issue. The question is, what form should reparations look like? I mean, what Senator Sanders has said is one form is doing what Jim Clyburn wants, which is making sure that most of the federal resources, at least a significant chunk of the federal resources, 10%, are going to communities with systematic poverty to invest in education and infrastructure and healthcare, and those communities happen to be significantly African-American. Another form could be supporting the HBCUs.
The one place I would disagree with you, Kevin, is the studies show that African Americans tend to be the most patriotic Americans of all of us. So I don't think that this is about making sure that they remain patriotic. The studies are overwhelming. They are very, very patriotic. This is about making sure that we're dealing with systematic inequality to provide people with opportunities and recognizing that race plays a significant role in that.
Yeah, now even David Brooks, the conservative columnist, is coming out and saying, time to look at reparations.
And it's important to realize that reparations, people think of reparations and they say, okay, does that mean people get a check? And that's often not the way the most thoughtful people are thinking about reparations. It's one way of thinking about it. But you talk to people like Cornel West or others, and they'll tell you what one way of reparations is. What is our program for jobs? What is our program for education? What is our program for health care in communities that have faced redlining, that have faced segregation, and recognizing that we may need significant more investment in communities where there is a significant African-American population to overcome racism and create opportunity. And I think...
Welcome back, Congressman Ro Khanna, taking your calls for the hour. And Bob in Alliance, Ohio. Hey, Bob, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Congressman.
Hi, Bob.
I'd like to know, this money that Trump supposedly got from FEMA for damages to his place down in Florida, is Congress going to go after him and try to recover that money since they've said that there was not enough damage to qualify for the amount that he got? And if they do recover it, will the money, they'll make sure money gets sent where it's supposed to go?
Well, Bob, I think Congress should certainly look into that, along with a host of other conflicts of interest and financial mismanagement issues that this administration has had. But the bigger point, in my view, is why is it that FEMA's response has been so inadequate when it comes to Puerto Rico, and you have people there who are literally still facing malnutrition, lack of electricity, lack of education, and we aren't doing anything. So my focus is on making sure that FEMA is responding appropriately to the crisis there.
Les in Puyallup, Washington. Les, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes. Hi, thank you. I was caught a little segment of Democracy Now!, and they were discussing the detainment and harassment of reporters and lawyers who are working with the immigrants trying to seek asylum. So consequently, they're spying on them and detaining them at the border. Do you know anything about it?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, this administration has had a policy of intentional cruelty. And by that, I mean, this isn't cruelty by accident. What they want is to provide a disincentive for people coming here, even legally. And so they want to show as much cruelty as possible to disincentivize people from coming. And they distort things. I mean, I read somewhere that we have about 20,000 asylum cases that we grant in a year. Think about that. In a country of almost 330-plus million, we're taking 20,000 asylum grantees. And yet we made such a big issue over people who are coming here for asylum. So we need to investigate this. We had in the oversight hearing already, oversight committee, a hearing on what's going on in the border. And I'm going to push that we look into also how the administration is treating lawyers and folks who are assisting folks who are processing their cases legitimate really through the asylum process.
Dennis in Alexandria, Virginia. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Thank you for taking my call, Congressman and Tom.
Thank you, Dennis.
Can you tell me, Congressman, whether there's any plan to present a bill authorizing anyone that wants to run for office must submit 10 years of their federal income taxes as well as a health report before they can get their name on a ballot, whether they're running the first time or for re-election?
Well, I certainly support the taxes. I certainly support it at the presidential level. I'm happy to support it at the congressional level. I mean, the irony is an individual can go and find out more about me or my family's financial
assets and financial condition than they can about the President of the United States. I mean, members of Congress and senators have to fill out long forms of every financial part of our background. The President doesn't have the same obligation. So I would increase the transparency on the President. I would say 10 years of tax returns for the President, maybe some amount, maybe less for members of Congress or senators, or I'm fine even with 10 years for both of them. The health I'm a little bit more hesitant on, just because, you know, you don't want to put people at a disadvantage, I think, or force them to be public about private illnesses. But I'm open to having some form of transparency as long as it doesn't violate people's privacy.
Gail in Antelope, California. Just a minute, a little more than a minute until the end of this hour, Gail. A real quick one here for the Congressman.
Yes, really quickly, Congressman. I wanted to find out, I understand that FEMA had allocated funds to California for repairs to the Oroville Dam that had the severe damage. Now they're refusing to provide those funds to California, and I heard that the state is trying to sue them. What's with that, and is there anything Congress can do to get those funds released for repairs?
Well, we're already trying. Thank you, ma'am. Our delegation has written a letter to try to make sure we don't lose that funding. You know, this administration has targeted California. They've targeted blue states. They've targeted the FEMA funding. They've targeted money for high-speed rail. It makes no economic sense. Of course, California is almost 15% of the GDP of this country, a lot of the innovation and economic growth. It's the largest state in terms of economic contribution, but this administration doesn't care. They view it as a blue state and one that they're going to penalize. And I don't think I've ever lived through a president or an administration that has been that overtly discriminatory based on political allegiance and that oblivious to investments that would help the United States.
It truly is extraordinary. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us today. It's just absolutely wonderful that you come on this program and do this National Town Hall with us every other week. I really appreciate it.
It's really a pleasure. I learned so much from the people who call in.
Thank you.
And
thanks again. Congressman Ro Khanna, his website, Khanna, khanna.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna, R-O Khanna. And we'll be back in just a minute with Ryan Grimm, the Bureau Chief of The Intercept, the D.C. Bureau Chief.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.